Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Hello, Jackie Pretty, and welcome to the Private Practice Secrets podcast. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. So Jackie Pretty is the founding CEO of Grammar Factory. And what Grammar Factory are especially wonderful at is getting a book out of people. And they got a book out of me. And if you can get a book out of me, that is a mighty fine thing. And we all survived and we're still friends. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm glad you consider us to still be friends because it was touch and go for a while there.
Oh, that final edit nearly broke us both. Tell us a little bit about Grammar Factory.
Absolutely. Well, Grammar Factory is a publishing company and we work with small business owners and entrepreneurs and health practitioners, and we turn their knowledge into published books. And that may include starting with them at the very beginning of the process when they have an idea and they need some help extracting it from their heads, or they might have a very big Word document that they want to turn into a book, so we can edit that, design it, print it, and so on.
Yeah. I've met lots of allied health practitioners who have this throwaway line that later when I'm not busy, I'm going to write a book. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What is it that it's something that's put off? Why do you reckon that happens?
Oh, that's a good question. I think first of all, we are very busy. I mean, anyone who's running their own practice or anyone who's self-employed has a lot on their plate. It's not just working with your patients. It's everything that happens behind the scenes to keep the business going. So that's part of it. But the other thing is that a book seems like such a big thing. You know, it's not just a tweet or a Facebook post or even a blog post. If someone's a blogger, it's, you know, 30 to 50,000 words for most people. And because it seems like such a big thing and the finish line seems so far off, I think that makes people put off starting it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we hit the recording, we were talking about the fear of starting, and with that comes the fear of what people will think and even the fear of success. Mm. How do you kind of, what do you say to kind of get people, you know, opening that Word document and getting started? How can that fear be kind of managed?
I think it's really important to put a name on what the specific fear is for you, or if fear is too strong a word, what the limit or the internal chatter is. Yeah, the hesitation, that's a good word. Because once you know what it is for you, then it's much easier to find a workaround. So I remember that my book, which came out back in 2015, I put it off for months, and I'm a writer and an editor, like it shouldn't have been a problem for me. And eventually what I realized was that I kept putting off my book because I am a writer and an editor and I've read many brilliant books, and I thought that anything I wrote needed to be worthy of a Nobel Prize, which is a lot of pressure to put on yourself when you're trying to write that first sentence and that first paragraph. So once I realized that that was the thing that was holding me back, rather than saying, oh, it doesn't need to be any good, or, you know, I'll just make it brilliant, I'm naturally brilliant, or trying to talk myself out of it in any of those ways, I came up with a compromise with that inner voice and said, okay, well, what if rather than focusing on brilliant, we just made it decent? And I sort of went, okay, yeah, I can work with decent. And I did a decent first draft and went through editing, and now it's a great book. So It really depends on what the hesitation is for you, though. So if it's you're worried about what people will think, then maybe you don't show it to anyone just yet. Maybe you continue working on it until you're comfortable to show it to someone. Maybe the first person you show it to is an editor rather than your peers, and then the editor can give you feedback to make it better so that by the time it's ready to go to print, you have something you're proud of and you want to show to all of these people because you know they're going to love it.
Yeah, that makes sense. When I was writing it, I didn't show it to anyone. But what I was doing it, I was sending it to my daughter just by way of, you know, 27 steps of backup. And I would just email it to her and I'd just say, save this somewhere. And then one day an email came back and she said, I've read it. It's really good. It's rough, Mum, but it's really good. And that was all I needed. That got me through the next kind of 15 days of 1,000 words a day. And so that little glimmer that someone thought it was half decent was really helpful for me. And then you were the next person that wrangled it into some useful sort of shape. So you can get the help you need all the way along, I guess, can't you?
Absolutely. It's just figuring out what that help is for you.
Yeah. So if we take somebody who thinks they've got a book in them, what is a great way for them to start to kind of get that stuff bubbling to the surface a bit more?
I always recommend that people get started by doing a blueprint, which is my word for a very detailed outline. And that, and in fact, my book Blueprint, goes through in a lot of detail how you can actually do it. And it starts with figuring out what your idea is and doing a mind map and then turning that mind map into bullet points that will guide your writing process. And the reason I recommend this is because I see far too many people committing themselves to, say, a 30,000 word challenge, which I know is what you did, where you write 1,000 words a day for 30 days, but they have nothing to guide them during those 30 days. So they spend their hour of writing time staring at a blank page and watching the clock tick down, and then they just start writing whatever comes to their head. And often it's babble. Often it's repeating something they've already written. Sometimes they might be jumping around, so they're not covering things in as much depth as they could have. And it can be a bit of a mess. And that means things get very difficult and very messy when it comes to the editing process. If you have a blueprint, on the other hand, you know exactly what you're going to write every time you sit down to write, because all you're doing is expanding on the bullet points that are already there. I also think that having a blueprint or starting with a blueprint takes the pressure off the writing process, because rather than thinking, oh God, now I've got to sit down and write my book, it's no, now I'm doing a mind map, or now I'm figuring out who my target readers are. Now I'm planning the three subtopics I want to talk about in this chapter, and it makes it much easier to tackle, because suddenly rather than writing an entire book, it's in these bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, I would have loved more structure, and you would have loved me to have had more structure, I suspect. I want to just pick up on something you said just then about knowing who the ideal reader is. How is that helpful?
It's helpful because it hones the focus of your book. There's a saying along the lines of, if you're trying to reach everyone, you'll reach no one, and that applies to marketing, to publishing, to any format through which you want to get a message out to the world. In my case, my book is written for people who aren't writers, who are writing their first book. Most of them probably won't write another book, which means rather than, you know, learning how to create a daily writing practice and it becoming this spiritual endeavor, they really just want to get a good book out as efficiently as possible and do it as well as possible. So that's where the blueprint system comes from. If I was writing for people who wanted to be fiction writers, and let's say writing was their passion and they wanted to create that daily practice and it was a higher calling, that would be a very different book. And they wouldn't be looking for the hacks or the shortcuts, because for them, the process is everything. Mm-hmm. And that's true of every book. Like if you're I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say you're a naturopath and you want to write a health and wellness book. Well, is that for someone who wants to lose weight? Is it for someone who wants more energy? Is it someone who wants to clear up their skin? Or potentially they have children who might have some health issues? Every single one of those audiences needs different content and a different message. So knowing who your reader is up front makes the writing process much easier because you're writing the right thing from the beginning.
Yeah, it also makes it quite a bit easier to sell and get leverage.
Oh, absolutely.
Down the track. We'll talk about that in a tick. But it also helps you, I suspect, engage a little bit more honestly and authentically as you write, so that you actually imagine that person holding your book and you're having a chat with them. So it can sort of help you invest your time and your thinking as well. Is that,
absolutely,
has that been the experience of other writers?
Absolutely. I find that those who have a really clear idea of who their reader is up front, even if their book needs work when it gets to an editor, the bones are there. And even if they aren't quite saying it, they know what they want to say, they know how they want to communicate, they know how they want to help this person they're writing to. And if they don't have that up front, they're often trying to retroactively fit it in, which is really difficult, and it doesn't always work.
Yeah. So we've sort of started the conversation about what to do at the start, and I guess think about your ideal client, the mind mapping and harvesting the ideas. What's the next step after that?
I'm just trying to think of how to tackle this question, because I could just say the next step is to write it, but that doesn't give you a lot of information. So I would start by figuring out your idea, and your idea, you want to test it when it comes to three different areas. The first one is your target reader and whether this addresses their problems and desires. The next one is this something you're passionate about and you're genuinely interested in writing? Because it is tough and you want that passion to fuel you through the process. And then the next piece is, do you have the knowledge to write about this? Now, once you have that and your idea has ticked all of the boxes, that's when you start expanding on it. And I think a mind map is a great way to do it. So you put your idea in the center of the page. And then if you're writing a how-to book, what I would do is go, well, how can I help my readers do this? And for each of your ideas about how you help them do that becomes a secondary idea that branches off the main idea of the book. And then for each of those secondary ideas, you go, well, how do I help my readers do that? And you get third level ideas that branch off those second level ideas. And if you keep asking yourself how, you'll end up with a lot to write about, because those hows will become your chapters and your subtopics. Now, once you've got that, I think the next step is to organize it into what I call the blueprint. Now, I believe that structure is very helpful for writing the right thing at the right time. And I'll continue with the example of a how-to book, because they do tend to be more formulaic. So if you're writing a how-to book, you want an introduction at the beginning, a conclusion at the end, and the process in the middle. So that might be your 7 steps or 5 key areas that readers need to address, and so on. So you look at your mind map and you order all of your bubbles that you've written down into those 5 or 7 steps or however many. Once you know those steps, you need to figure out what are the practical pieces of advice I can give my readers to help them in each of these areas. And that's where the bones of your chapters start to come in. So like a book needs an introduction, a conclusion, and chapters in the middle, your chapter needs a mini introduction into the topic. It needs a summary at the end. And then in the middle, you have your subtopics. So I'll go back to my own book. The first chapter is about how to find the right idea. And the way it's structured is exactly what we've been talking about. So there's an introduction about the importance of finding your idea. And the 3 subtopics in that chapter are passion, your readers, and your knowledge. And then there's a summary at the end. So that's the next step. You start to order the ideas in your mind map. And then once you have those broad points for each chapter, so your introduction, your subtopics, your conclusion, then you start expanding on those.
I'm holding your book and looking at it as you speak, only to realise this isn't a visual medium. But if I flip through the pages on your book, you've got some activities, if you like, that people have to go and consider. So you've got action time. And it's not necessarily at the end of a chapter, it's throughout it, but it's just getting people to think and sort of take the next step from reading it to actually applying it. Is that something that typically works quite well in how-to books?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you think about a how-to book, the reason someone's picking it up is because they want a solution to whatever problem they're facing, or they want to be able to achieve a goal. And the value in the book is you teaching them how to do that. So the more practical activities you give them, the more questions you give them to think about, that creates more of the value they want. And that then creates happy readers who send more happy readers your way and hopefully turn into clients and patients.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's the end game, that you're adding value all through that ecosystem as well. And plenty of people who read your book might never get in touch, but it might have really helped them in ways that you perhaps can't even imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All righty. So got a reader in mind, got the ideas sorted, got some mind mapping, got some ideas of the structure. What's your secret sauce for actually hitting the keys and getting all of the words coming out?
I'm actually reluctant to make concrete recommendations about this bit, and the reason is because different things work for different people.
What have you heard about that works?
So there's setting a regular time every day when you sit down and write, and that's the only thing you do. So that might be first thing in the morning. It might be late at night if you're a night owl, but you have half an hour or an hour every day and you write something every day until the book is done. So that's one thing. Now, that never worked for me because consistency has never been my strong suit. I'm working on that now, but it definitely wasn't when I wrote my book. So what I did was I ended up with a week off work and I was going to write my book in that week. And I ended up doing it in 3 days because each of those days I was writing for 8 to 10 hours every day. I also had a very detailed blueprint when I started. So my own blueprint was about 10,000 words, I think. So, and my finished book is 40,000 words. So a quarter of it was already done when I sat down to write, which made it a lot easier. The other method is finding snippets of time when you can. So one of my clients actually wrote her book on her phone on her commute to and from work because she was still working a day job at that time. Now, the downside of that method, I think, is that it takes a lot longer and it's a lot less, I don't want to say it's a lot less disciplined, because if you are doing it in every little bit of free time you have, then that does take discipline, but it's less reliable because you don't know when you're going to get those bits of free time. So depending on your personality, I'd go either commit to writing every day until it's done, or take a couple of weeks off work and just go into hibernation for that time and get it out.
Wow, I'm still processing the client who wrote it on her phone. Was she typing or was she voice recording it and getting it transcribed?
Well, she was on the train, so I assume she was typing it. Might have been a bit odd just talking into her phone.
She wouldn't be alone on the train. Goodness me. Goodness me. All righty. So the little sort of A5 sort of skinny-ish paperbacks that we pick up, yours has got 40,000 words, but most of those sort of off-the-shelf books between 30 and 40,000 words?
I'd say between 30 and 50.
Okay.
And the reason for that is just because we've already commented on people being busier than they've ever been before. So a book of that length, I think it's a much easier commitment for most people to pick it up and read it than a weighty tome. Mm. And it's quite, from a publishing perspective, it is becoming more common. They are more popular. You know, people want something they can read on the plane from Melbourne to Brisbane.
Yeah, absolutely. The reading time on your book, you've got it on the back cover, is 153 minutes, so a bit over 2 hours. Did you know that was there?
No, I didn't. I should know what's on my own.
Just saying.
No, I think in that case, you must have the republished one because I originally self-published it and then it was picked up by a publisher in New York and was re-released last year. So I think that might be the newer edition.
Okay. All good. All good. All right. So you're sitting there, you've been tapping away. I wrote my book in 30 days. You wrote yours in 3 days. Some people might take 3 years, whatever it is for you. What's the next step when you've got all the words, you've got it all sorted in what you think are the chapters? Where does it go next?
So usually I'd recommend putting it aside for a month and then going back to it so you can go over it with fresh eyes. But once you've given it your own review, the next step is going to an editor.
And what do they do?
Well, it depends on which one you go to because there's no universal certification body for editors. So you have a spectrum of services out there. And at one end of the spectrum, you've got someone who will correct your spelling and grammar, and that's about it. And I like to think of them as the human spell checkers. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the spectrum, you've got someone who will correct your spelling and grammar, and they'll also give you feedback on what you can do to improve your book. So they might say, this chapter is really strong, but I think it would be better at the beginning. You've talked about the same thing in 5 different places, maybe put them all in one spot. Or you're rambling here, try cutting it back. Now, that can be very helpful for some writers, especially if you're an experienced writer. But what I find with a lot of the people we work with is because they're not writers and they generally don't have a lot of time, they see all of this feedback and it's a little bit overwhelming. And that means the book gets put into a drawer and gets forgotten about. So what we do is another step above that, which is if a chapter would be stronger at the beginning, we will pick it up, move it to the beginning, and then rework the language so it feels like it always fit in that part of the book. If one of our clients has spoken about something in 5 different places, we'll cut and paste all of that content into the same area and then rework it so it feels like it was always one discussion. If they're rambling, we'll cut it back. Basically, the only thing we don't do is add new content because that usually needs to come from the author because they're the subject matter expert. But we do try to provide a lot of feedback around what they can add. So once you've finished your draft, the next step is editing. There are a number of different editing services. What I find is that most people should start with that really hands-on editing, and it usually gets lighter from there. So our end-to-end publishing package includes 3 separate rounds of edits, where the first one is that really aggressive, we'll pull your book apart and put it back together edit, which you experienced.
the book I never wrote arrived back, yes. Completely wrangled into shape.
So that's the first edit. The next one is usually, it's what I call a semi-structural edit. It's usually between that and just a language check. And the reason for that is because most of the structure and content is good. It was sorted in the last round, but we do need to go through the new stuff as well. And then the final edit is actually with a different proofreader. And the reason for that is because when you're very familiar with your own work, it's hard to catch typos and spelling errors and so on. And an editor who's been through 2 rounds of aggressive editing with you is going to know your book really well. So we always get the second person. So you've got a fresh set of eyes going through everything.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And if you can, I just strongly recommend getting each of those rounds of edits because they are very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to remember at what point. It was probably after the final edit, or maybe just before the final edit, I invited a couple of colleagues and a couple of ideal readers to take a look and to read through it. And that was its first public outing. That was its first debut. And I still remember hitting send on that email. And it went out to 3 parents who have a child with a disability, and it went out to 3 allied health professional colleagues. And I just thought I'd never see them again. But good on them. They got through it and they had suggestions. So it must have been before the final edit. They had suggestions and I was then able to politely request some testimonials to go at the front of it as well. And that was that was interesting.
Well, I'm sure they would have been happy to give you a testimonial because it's a very good book.
Thank you. Seems like a long time ago. So you've had it edited and I guess many people would sort of think that it just goes off to the printer. I had no idea about this. I knew I needed to find a cover and get a cover built, but I didn't realise about this internal layout bit. Talk us through that. That's just a whole new world.
Absolutely. And it's a very subtle art, actually, because most people don't realise that it's something they need to look at. And I do occasionally see books where people have just sent the Word document to the printer. And the reason you don't want to do that is because we've all read books, obviously. Like, even if we don't read as adults, we've all read books as children and textbooks at school and so on. And because of that experience, we all have an idea of what a professional book looks like. And what the internal layout designer is, they design your book so it looks like that. So they're looking at the margins, the fonts. They'll make recommendations on font size and style and spacing in between the lines based on your genre, your audience, how much content you actually have. And all of that comes together to create a book that looks like a professional book. And what happens from a reader perspective is they open up your book and if it looks professional and it's easy to read, they won't notice it at all, which is what you want because you want them engaging with your content. If it doesn't look professional, so let's say you haven't used a classic font or it's too large or you have just gone and printed the Word document, you've resized it so it's A5 but it is just the Word document, they'll see it and they'll go, something doesn't look quite right, but they can't put their finger on it. And anytime something doesn't look quite right with your book, that raises a little question mark in the back of their mind where they go, oh, is this actually a professional book after all? And in some cases, it won't actually matter how qualified you are or how good your content is. If it doesn't look the part as well, it damages your credibility.
I've put many a book back on the shelf because it looks too hard to read. So these guys are specialists. This is their job.
Absolutely.
They are the king and queen of fonts and indents and spacing and borders and boxes and oh my gosh, it was such a unique language. And it was really quite interesting to see it was sort of at that point that really the content sprung to life and it sort of took on its book life. Because you knew it was in the best shape it possibly could be. But then to make it visual was really, really good. Particularly I had illustrations, so they all slotted in as well.
Yeah, no, I think when you see that PDF of your designed book, that's when it starts to feel like a real book rather than just a Word document.
Yeah. So then there's the cover. It's got to look beautiful. Mm-hmm. How does all that magic happen?
So obviously it'll vary from designer to designer, but what we do is we get our clients to complete a rather lengthy questionnaire which includes all of their preferences. So whether they like certain colours, whether they like typographic covers versus ones with illustrations versus ones with photos. We get them to include examples of covers they like and covers they don't. And then I send all of that to our designer who's very experienced in doing covers, and she takes that. She has a synopsis of the book and usually the first couple of chapters. So she takes the client's brief plus the information she has about the book plus her own knowledge about what's appropriate for different genres, and she then uses that to create a PDF file with 10 different cover ideas. And what's interesting at this stage is one of three things might happen. The first is that the client will fall in love with one cover and will just continue working on that. The second is that they might go, I really like the title on this one, but I like the illustration on this one. Can we see how they might look together? And then the third scenario is that they don't like any of them. And one of the things I always say is that's okay, because this is just the starting point. And that initial round of concepts is just to get a sense for what the client likes and what they're looking for. And we then just keep refining from there and suggesting new ideas and working with the existing covers until we get it right. Now, what is interesting is that some people, or most people, know that they need a professional cover designer and the book needs to look good. But a lot of people don't consider the constraints that exist within their genre. And often they try to go too far out of the box, to the extent where and a reader might not know what their book's about. So sometimes there's a little bit of reining the client in as well and going, okay, yes, we can try and incorporate that, but if you really want to reach your readers, then this is what you should aim for, and maybe go to your local Dimmicks, have a wander around that section of the bookshop and see what the books actually look like, and you'll notice there are patterns. Like personal development books will often have a photo of the author on the cover, or they'll tend to be more text-based covers with maybe an abstract image. They don't tend to have a lot of photographic covers in that genre. Business books tend to have much heavier fonts, and they tend to use a lot of blues and sometimes reds as well. So it's, or if you're in health and wellness, green is often more common. So just getting a sense for the constraints of your genre.
I was surprised I'll use the word formulaic it was, that the author's name goes here and the title should be here and then the tagline here and that it should only take up this much space. And then there's this whole extra bit, there's the spine and then there's the back cover, which is actually more or differently important to the front cover, and yet it's all quite formulaic. But so while you have some say in what you want it to look like, it's really important to trust in the process of who you're working with, because they've done a lot more covers than you have.
Absolutely. And it's like what I was saying about the internal layout. As readers, we're trained to know what to expect. And if your book doesn't look like what your readers expect, they either won't look at it or they'll have questions about it.
Yeah, it will raise a little a caution with them. So that's the fun, pretty stuff. And then it all gets kind of put into one big file and you get that last look at it. And do the majority of your clients, Jackie, self-publish and pay for the whole process themselves?
Yes. So we're a self-publishing company. So the distinction being that if you're self-publishing, you're paying for the publishing expenses. But when you sell your books, you get to keep all the profits, whereas a traditional publisher will pay for all of the publishing expenses, but they take the lion's share of the profits once the book's available for sale.
Yeah. I was surprised and delighted that the actual physical cost of the printing wasn't nearly as expensive as I anticipated, but the costs sat in the people and the advice and the guidance and the adventure to date. So if we sort of fast track it a bit, your file goes off to the printer and then you get an email from your print manager or your good self sort of saying they're ready, and then these boxes arrive, and then you unpack all these boxes and you think, oh, I might have overcommitted here, because you're looking at 13 boxes of 80 or whatever it is. Then the fun starts, and oh dear, nervous fun starts. You've actually got to do something with this baby that you've birthed.
Yes.
What in your experience is that moment for the new author? What does it look like from your perspective?
So the what happens next moment.
Yeah, I've got them. They're in the spare room. But what happens next?
Well, for the naughty authors who haven't prepared, they sit in the spare room and nothing happens. But if you've prepared, what happens next is, you know, a good author might have a list of media contacts who they're sending the books to. So one of our clients is a family lawyer based in Brisbane, and her first book was basically about having a peaceful divorce. And she got a list of 30 different media contacts who who she thought might be interested in her story. And she then created these like little divorce care packages with the book almost. So I think there was like a scented candle, some chocolate and so on. And she wrapped it all up so it was beautiful and then sent it to the journalist with a handwritten note. So it was something that the journalist really wanted to open. And she ended up getting a lot of media attention because of that. So one is sending your book out to relevant media outlets if traditional media is relevant for your business. Another thing is reaching out to partners who could potentially set you up with speaking engagements or refer you to groups of new clients. So I know another client who does marketing for dentists, and she already had a relationship with the three major dental organizations in Australia. And even before the book came out, she was liaising with them to see if they wanted to do some pre-orders with her. And I think she sold over 1,000 copies of her book in advance just through those three relationships. And one of them ended up putting her on a speaking tour where in every state they would have a room full of dentists and she would be able to talk to them about her marketing. So reaching out to the right partners is so valuable because it means your marketing starts to happen by itself.
I'm sensing another mind map here.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Continue.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to share another partnership example, which, in fact, I've got another two. One is with a woman who helps small businesses with their employee issues, and she is working on a partnership with an insurance provider, I believe, that has a lot of small business clients. And they want to order, I think, 30 or 50,000 books to distribute to their small business clients. And then there's another one in the home building space who's negotiating a similar deal with, one of the big four banks. And similarly, they want to order tens of thousands of copies of her book. So just getting like one of those partnerships is a game changer. And then beyond that, of course, day to day, anytime you're having a coffee with a new client or having a phone call with a potential patient, you're sending them a copy of your book so they can get to know you and the type of work you do.
Which brings us full circle back to why you're writing your book and who the readers are going to be and the value it delivers. And there's some sense in sort of planning the marketing campaign or the messaging campaign alongside the writing so that you're really on the front foot for when those boxes arrive and that you've almost got dates and things set up rather than losing potentially a month or two with your boxes in the spare room.
Ideally, that's the way you do it. However, I do know that the writing and publishing process is a pretty big endeavor. So I also understand when just some people just focus on that part of the process because it is a lot. And you can always start the marketing once the book is out and once it's printed. But yes, ideally you would be planning the marketing campaign while you're working on the book.
How many book launches have you been to over the years, Jackie?
I don't go to a lot of book launches, actually.
Don't you get invited?
I'm just trying to think. I mean, a lot of our clients are interstate and some of them are international, so that affects things. Some of them don't actually launch books, though. I think some of them they jump straight into like the marketing and using the book. They forget to do a launch. And that's a little bit sad, I think, because you don't ever get a chance to just celebrate the fact that you did this amazing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of my colleagues have done virtual launches where it's an online event and they've been really able to reach all sorts of people all over the country and the world through, you know, a video conference and or a webinar sort of thing, and that's been really effective. So it doesn't have to be a the local hall and balloons dropping from the ceiling. It can have a unique piece to it. Ebooks. So that's another few clicks and that needs a little bit of adjustment as well. Do you recommend that people do have an ebook version and have it up on Amazon and the like?
Absolutely. I think that one of the benefits of having your book is that you're getting yourself and your skills and your business in front of more people and converting it to an ebook and having it available on Amazon and the other major online platforms just gives it an opportunity to get in front of even more of those people. And the other thing is that not everyone likes to read physical books anymore, which is a little bit sad, but some people prefer to use their Kindle or their iPad. And if your book's only available in print, then you're losing access to a whole lot of potential readers. So definitely, it usually doesn't cost that much more. It doesn't take that much longer. It can be done at the same time as your physical book's going to print.
Yeah, and then there's several places to have that sitting, and then you can get really super excited and set up campaigns to get it up into the number one bestseller spot in your category. So it does become a bit of a competitive sport, I think, when it gets to that point.
It does, but it's all in good fun.
Indeed, indeed. So it doesn't have to be daunting. It can be a really enjoyable, cathartic kind of experience as well. I'm sitting here, I'm still holding your book, Jackie, I must admit, and sort of, you know, patting the cover. How about you just quickly talk us through your book and where to get it, because I love it and I've managed not to give it away. I've nearly given it away a few times, but I really want to hold on to it. So talk us through your book and what's between the covers.
Sure. So my book is Book Blueprint, How Any Entrepreneur Can Write an Awesome Book. And it outlines the blueprint process I've been alluding to throughout this podcast interview. So it goes in depth on how to find the right idea, how to figure out who your readers are, how to create your mind map, how to flesh that out into a blueprint, how you can reuse content you might already have. And by the end of it, the goal is that you'll have a blueprint that's anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 words so that when you do sit down to write, whether you're taking a week off somewhere or whether you're doing that hour a day for 30 days, the writing process will be so easy. Ideally, the book will write itself.
Oh, they're mighty fine words. Great. That's great. And mindful of time, tell us a little bit more about Grammar Factory and how you kind of, I'm waving my arms out wide, how you kind of hold that writing publishing process for people.
So Grammar Factory does a few things. I might have mentioned that we only work with business leaders, entrepreneurs, practitioners, so experts in their field who want to establish themselves as leaders in that area of expertise. They're not writers, and that means all of our services are designed around their needs. So we have one-day book blueprint workshops where I take people through the process I outline in my book. We have editing services, which, you know, we're the ones who will pull your book apart and put it back together, as we've talked about, rather than just doing this human spell check. We have ghostwriting services, which are really good for people who don't have the time or desire to write the book themselves, but they do have the knowledge to write a book. So we spend a lot of time getting that knowledge out of their head, and then one of our ghostwriters can do a 40,000-word first draft based on all of our interviews and workshopping together. And then, of course, we have the book publishing services. So if you have an idea and you want us to write it for you, or you have a big Word document that you want to turn into a book, we can take that from a Word document to a professionally published book, as well as an ebook that's distributed online via about 1,800 online retailers. And we can do that in about 4 months.
Goodness, that's pretty snappy.
Especially when you compare to traditional publishing, which is about 2 years.
Wow, very cool, very cool. Thank you so much for sharing all of that up. I don't know if I'm getting enthused for a second book or not. You'll be the first to know. I did say out loud that I had another book in me a couple of weeks ago. So, oh, goodness knows. But it is a really exciting process, and it's a very proud moment when you hold that book in your hands and when you can say to people that you're an author and that you've got a book that helps other people. I think for me that was the big tick. And just fascinating learning something so new and exciting too. Yeah, it's very cool. Thank you so much. How about you shout out your website, and if you've got any last motivating pearls of wisdom for people to get their book on, you can have the last word, Jackie.
Well, our website is grammarfactory.com, and if you're interested in getting your book started, we do have an ultimate guide to writing an awesome book on there that has a bunch of free booklets and webinars and the first couple of chapters of my book. So if you go to Grammar Factory, there's a little start here link at the top of the screen, so just click that and you can get all of those resources. As far as words of wisdom or motivation go, just get started. I mean, let's say you need time to write it. So let's say in 6 months you could be a published author, but it starts with you right now finding your idea, sitting down to write. And as soon as you start that, the rest of the process sort of takes care of itself. So just get started.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I'd love to you to come back on the podcast perhaps later in 2018 and give us a bit of an update, a little bit more information perhaps about your workshops and stuff. That all sounds really good. Thank you, Jackie. Have a good one, and we will talk soon.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.